Pirushos. Shus, Rashi Akoilo, Chavre Akoilo, Loimde Akoilo. Bez Hashem, tonight we'll discuss disclosure in Shiduchim. You know, the Pasuk says, Basa basoda treifa loisechelon, can't eat a treifa. What are you supposed to do with it? Lakelev tashlifa loisechelon. Then read the next Pasuk. It says, Loisisa shema shav, the Issa of Lashon Hara. The Gemara in Psachim says, what is the connection between these psukim? We learn out from here, Shekola mesaper lashon hara, ra'i lashlichay leklavim. Throw him to the dogs. What's the connection? Why should you throw him to a dog? And the Maral explains as follows. Why do we give a treifa to a kelev? As Chazal say, Rashi brings it down. Because when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, ulchol b'nei Yisrael l'yechratz kelev l'shaynei. Now, even though it's the normal nature of a dog to bark, but they held themselves in l'chav kavod klal Yisrael. Which means a dog can sometimes choose to bark, or knows when to bark and when not to bark. A person, we can certainly expect of them to know when to talk and when to remain silent. If a person talks when they're not supposed to be talking, so you should know they're worse than a dog. And therefore, lakelev tashlicha naisa, ra'i lashlicha leklav. At the same time, as we learned on Monday, that there's a steer, the pasuk begins, loiseilech rochel ba'amecha, do not be a gossip. And then it says, v'loisamoid al dam re'echa, don't stand idly by when your friend's blood is being spilled. And the Netziv says that this is written in one pasuk to tell you that you have to balance the two. At times we have to know, leiseilech rochel ba'amecha, remain silent, don't be a gossip. And at times one has to speak out because of leisamoid al dam re'echa. What we're going to do tonight is discuss in regard to shidduchim, when should one disclose and when should one remain silent. And in fact, this affects three different groups of people. One group of people are the principals themselves that are involved, the boy, the girl, the family. These are the principals that are involved in the shidduch. Then you have other people that you're asking information about. These are bystanders that you are inquiring about the principals. And then you have the people like a shatchem and others that serve as advisors to the shidduch process. These are three different groups of people with three different bodies of halacha that apply to them. When we talk about the principles, everyone understands that when you enter a shidduch, you're trying to put on your best face and you're trying to make an impression. So what is one's halachic obligation? Not to engage in mekachtos or oino. You mustn't fool someone else into something, and certainly not to a degree that it's a fraudulent transaction. The second group are the people that are being asked information. They have the balance between leiseilech rochel ba'amecha and leisamed al dam re'echa. The third group are people who serve as advisors, including a shatchan. They have a different obligation, which is lifnei iver leisitein michshel, do not give bad advice. So let us divide these three groups of people and go through their dinim. The principles involved, which we say we understand that they are looking out for their own interests, and everyone understands that. However, they still have a responsibility not to fool anyone. Leisoinu ish es amisai. And certainly if you do a total fraudulent transaction, that is what we call a mekach tos. something doesn't necessarily have to be a mekach tos, but it's still oino. You have an item which is, if you sell something which is broken, that's a mekach tos. You have an item that has a defect in it, a slight defect, what we call a second, that is not mekach tos, it is oino. The same two halachas should apply to shidduchim. You mustn't fool someone into getting engaged or getting married to you. And sometimes, if you really fool someone, it might even be a mekach tos. And seemingly, we can apply the rules of transactions to the rules of shidduchim. The stipler in Yevamis, Simen Mem Dalet, asks a question on both of these premises. The Gemara in Ksuba says that Chayvei Lavan Vaasei Shelo Yekiru Bo B'Shas Nesuin. Person marries someone and they turn out to be a Chayvei Asei or a Lois Asei. Kohen marries a Grusha, he didn't know she's a Grusha. So the Gemara says that there's a Chiyuv Ksuba, even though they didn't know about it. Now if it would be a Mekach Tos or even a Suffolk Mekach Tos, then there wouldn't be a Chiyuv Ksuba. Even the Rambam who says that Chayvei Lavan, there is no Chiyuv Ksuba, but he says Chayvei Asei, there are. So the question is, why doesn't that constitute a Mekach Tos? Anayno, the Gemara in Yevamis describes a case where a person was Jewish, his mother was Jewish, but his father wasn't. And no one wanted to be Meshadach with him. Yevamis Daf Mem Hei. So Rav Huna said, Zilgali, go to a place where no one knows who you are, no one knows your family, and go do a shidduch. Sell to the kasha. Isn't he obligated to disclose that his father isn't Jewish? So as not to fool the person. Then they can decide. It's true this won't be a mekach tos because he's a kosher yid, but it's something that people might not want. And therefore, why did Rav Huna give advice, Zilgali, or Zil Tamir? How can he give such advice? Now, the latter question was already asked in Chuvus Imre Yeshe from Meir Arik, and he says that in a different town where people don't know who your father is, it's not all that important. It's not so important who the Shver is if you don't have to see him ever. As I said to Imre Yeshe. Pashtus, it's not like that. So the stipler says a tremendous yisayid in shidduchim. The way I would categorize it is that people aren't washing machines. See, when you buy a washing machine, you're expecting a perfect model. If it doesn't work, that's a mekach tos. Even if it works, but it has a dent in the back, and people are makbid on it, and you don't disclose it. You are over leisainu ishes amisa. Stipler says people aren't washing machines. Each person is, every washing machine is exactly the same. So therefore, everyone wants one that is perfect, with no dents, with no defects. People are not like that. Every person is totally, totally different. And therefore, to find the right shidduch, someone that is compatible for you, a person is willing to forgo certain imperfections. He doesn't say this, but I would add that every person has imperfections. You find the perfect person, you should know as nish ois sahalten, and you shouldn't marry them bechlal. And therefore, when you go into a shidduch, you recognize that there are going to be chesreinus, and you recognize that you're not going to be told them. Therefore, the stipler says that the threshold for oino, and certainly the threshold for mekach tos is much higher in shidduchim than it is in other transactions. So he says, what is the definition of this new threshold? So he says as follows, oino means you fail to disclose something which, when the person will find out about it after marriage, they won't accept it. Doesn't mean they'll get divorced, it could be they'll be stuck, but they won't accept it. But if there is something which after you're married, they'll find out, b'di'evid, they'll accept it willingly, then that is not aina. Precisely because people are different. And it's true, whenever some people, when they go into shidduchim, they have a long, long list of what's important. You get married, you realize there are not so many things that are so important. And therefore, they'll accept it b'di'evid willingly. Zok the stipler, anything that people will accept b'di'evid willingly doesn't have to be disclosed at all. Something that will not be accepted willingly, just the person will feel I'm stuck, there's nothing I could do, has to be disclosed. A mekach tos is only something which nobody in the world would want to marry such a person without knowing about it. Those are the hagdaras that he says. And therefore, if a person has a chsaron, and every person has a chsaron, but it's the type of chsaron that if a person, when they find out after you're married, they'll accept it willingly, it does, al pi halacha, it doesn't need to be disclosed. Now, I'm not giving here marriage and shidduch advice. It might be what's halachically mutter is not necessarily wise. For example, shidduchim and marriage is based on trust. And if you're withholding information, sometimes you're breaking that trust. More so, sometimes, as much as you try to withhold it, at a later date the other person finds out, and they have tainus on you, not for the chsaron, which could be from Hashem, but because you're not honest. Even worse is that many times you think you're hiding something and the other person knows about it and they're just trying to figure out if you're honest in the first place or not. But al kaponim, that is not the subject of today's shir, how you should get married or how you should not get married. The question just is, what am I obligated to disclose? I'm obligated to disclose something that if they would find out later, they would not accept it willingly. If they would accept it willingly afterwards, it does not need to be disclosed. Let's say something needs to be disclosed. At what point does it need to be disclosed? Now, it doesn't say this in halacha, but kibalti ma'avoysai mirabosai, that there's a difference. If the chsaron is such that it would constitute a mekach tos, or a possible mekach tos, it has to be disclosed up front before you meet. If it's the type of chsaron which would not be a mekach tos, it would just be aina, that they wouldn't accept willingly, then you have to disclose it. You're allowed to withhold it until the person knows you but is not emotionally attached to you. And at that point, you must disclose it and let the person make a decision. Mm-hmm. After how many meetings is that? It probably depends on how many times they're planning to meet in the first place. In the classic, let's call it yeshivish or litvish thing, we say after 3 meetings. If it's a 30-minute meeting in Williamsburg, it probably means 10 minutes into the 10 minutes into the meeting. If people are going to meet 50 times, so it's probably after the 15th time. But be'erach, that is the achra. So we defined that there are certain things which, although in mekach memke might be aina, but in shidduchim they're not, because person will accept it, b'di'evid will accept it b'ratzen, and everyone recognizes in shidduch people are not perfect. Then there are things that, if they find out afterwards, they will not be pleased at all. They might be stuck, but they won't be pleased. That you have to disclose. But you can wait to disclose it until the person knows you before you've formed an emotional kesher. Something.
What's mechayev you to disclose the thing that might be mechtais before anything?
Pashut seichel. And that's why I said there's no halacha. But something that might be a mechtais, I'll tell you why. Where's the seichel in it? Because if you drop a bomb after 3 meetings, and a girl says, you know, by the way, I can't have children, it's not going to work anyway. So you might as well disclose it up front, and people will know what they're dealing with. It's just plain experience. Now, the definitions of what a person's makbid on and what a person is not makbid on d'yevid can be totally societal and can be totally dependent on that particular shidduch. I'll give you a mashal. When I entered shidduchim, I have a subluxated right shoulder, which means I have no rotary motion in the right shoulder. If I go around with the right shoulder, it will pop out. I went to ask our family, Rabban in Brooklyn, or Moshe Bik, do I have to disclose it in the shidduch? So he looked at me and says, Svenzach, if she's marrying you als baseball spieler, if she's marrying you als ben yeshiva, then you don't have to. It's very posh. It depends what the person is looking for, and then you'll know whether you have to disclose it. Is this a chsarin that a person is makbara? Next, people are being asked information. So before anything, there are times there's a lot of good things to say, and people have to develop the Tovus Ayin to say good things and nice things about other people. Sometimes it's just like it's hard for people to, for some reason it's very hard for people to say nice things about other people. Or they think they sound sophisticated if they criticize everything. But it's not so. There are a lot of nice people out there. And you should feel free to praise them freely. To be honest, at times, the person themselves have their own children in Shidduchim, and things are not going so well. They have older children, and it's not going so well. And it's hard for them to praise another person, a younger person. But you should know it's the exact opposite. Toiv ayin hu yevorach. If a person has toivus ayin, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu showers blessings on the people. However, at the same time, like we said, and therefore, loisei l'chrachel b'mecha. However, at the same time, we have to recognize that at times in life, there's a question of loisamed al dam re'echa. You're not allowed to withhold information because you're harming a person. Now, although the Pasuk says dam re'echa, you're going to murder a person is dying, the Rambam in Sefer Mitzvot, loisasei reish sadizayin, shulchan aruch reish mishvot reish chavav, says that it's not only on atzalos nefashos. A person, it's also to be koivish edus. It's also not to be meyed that would help someone, because you're going to be over leisam al dam reyacha, even if it's just finances. Al achas kama v'kama, if you withhold information which will cause someone eternal agmas nefesh, there's a leisam al dam reyacha. Now, which things, which pieces of information fall into the category of leisam al dam reyacha? Now, again, these are general categories. So the Chafetz Chaim, at the end of his Sefer, has tziurim, examples he gives. And in tziur number 3, he says, and in Chuvas Chalkas Yaakov, Chelek Gimel Sim Kuf Lamed Vav, he says there are three areas that if you're asked about a person, you must disclose it. One is a machla pnimis, an internal illness. Two, the person has apokarsis. Three, the person engages in pritzis. Now let's define these three things. And what's unique about these three? So one is machla pnimis. What does it mean, a chayli hapnimi? And it means anything that will affect the quality of the person's life or the longevity of the person's life. Certain things that affect longevity. Quality is good, but they can't live so long. Or it's something that affects the quality of a person's life. That needs to be disclosed. Even if the person is taking medication and at the moment it will not affect them because of the medication, Rabbi Yashiv in Kuntres Yarche Kala and Moshe Shtembach and Chuvas Hanhagas Chelek Aleph say that it needs to be disclosed. If, however, it was a historic illness, and in all probability it will not return, then it doesn't need to be disclosed. If there's a probability of it returning, then the stipler in Chashuki Chemed and Moshe Shtembach in Chuvas Van Hugges says you have to disclose it. So we're talking about any illness, albeit it's controlled by medication, but it will affect the longevity. The illness itself affects the longevity and the quality of life, unless it's a historic illness which is not probable to return. The Chafetz Chaim says that a machla has to be disclosed, but a chulsha doesn't need to be disclosed. Some people are stronger and some people are weaker. A chulsha does not need to be disclosed. For example, someone whose life will not be affected in any way, provided they keep to a certain diet. So that is considered a chulsha, because as long as they stick to the diet, there's not a problem. Now, if they don't have self-control and they can't stick to the diet, then they have a different problem other than the thing that they need a diet for, and that's a different problem. Chuvas Chavis Yar, he has a question, what happens if a person cannot smell? They don't have, they're lacking the ability to smell. Is this a chsarn? Is it a machla pnimi? Is it a chsarn or not? And he says a very interesting thing. For a man, not, and for a woman, yes. He says a woman has to cook, and part of knowing of cooking and tasting things is the ability to smell. A man who cannot smell things is not a chsar. So therefore, this is machla pnimi. There's another issue of the person doesn't have a machla at all, but there's a genetic machla in the family. The Gemara in Yevamos Daf Samach Dalet says lo yisa odom loy min mishpachas nichvin loy min mishpachas mitzeron. Shouldn't marry a woman from a family of those who have seizures or those who have leprosy. Now, what does it mean? We're not talking about the person themselves, the mishpacha has it. How do you define whether a mishpacha has an illness? There are random illnesses all over. So there's a machlekes apaiskin. Rav Eliashiv writes that you define it if there are two in the family. The Stipler writes in Arachas Rabbeinu, it has to be three. Like they're arguing in Hilchas Chazakas, there's a machlekes of Chazakas two, or Chazakas three, which standard do you apply over here? The Chazon Ish writes, it really depends what you call family. An immediate family, two, is the definition of a chazaka. An extended family, then it is three. A woman who can't have children, says you have to reveal that. If, however, she could have children, just she has a weakness which will dictate that she won't be able to have as many children as the average woman, it does not have to be revealed. So that is the first grouping that if you're asked, you have to reveal is a machla pnimi. The next thing the Chavetz Chaim says, apokarsis. Person is an apokaris, then you have to tell the person. Chuvas Minchas Yitzchak, Chelik Vavsim Kuflamet Tes, it means a person who's oyver and aveira chamura. People who habitually are over avera chamura, that has to be disclosed. Now it's interesting to note that the Chavetz Chaim himself just says apokarsis. What about someone's a machal Shabbos? What about if someone eats treifus? Mishkan apokaris, he believes Shai Shema Yisrael, but he eats cheeseburgers. What's pshat in the Chavetz Chaim? I saw a fascinating pshat in the Sefer Marpa Loshen. He says, today society is divided into many, many different groupings. And therefore, and there are different levels of frumkeit, and people from this group don't marry people from the other group. At an earlier stage in life, people married across totally different groupings. If you look back, some of you can look back to your grandparents, and one of them was Afrima, one of them was Nishtas Afrima. That was the norm. And therefore the Chavetz Chaim was living in a time when there wasn't exactly grouping. So therefore the klal is, if a person's apokaris l'chol adayis, they're not suitable. Translated into contemporary terms, if in the group that you belong to and these people belong to, they're doing a shidduch, this is considered an avera chamura, then it has to be disclosed.
Subjective
apokarsis. Today, apokarsis is anyone who disagrees with me. So that's so as the groupings get narrower and narrower, what does an apokarsis mean? Someone disagrees with me. So Ibizayin is an apokarsis. But it, like you say, the Minchas Yitzchak said it means avera chamura. Apokarsis is only objective mushal that everyone agrees on is an avera chamura. Everything else is just a matter of how you define it. Anyone who comes from England knows that tens of thousands of Yidden who call themselves Orthodox Jews that don't keep Shabbos b'chol. Why? We are mainstream Orthodox. These are the ultra-Orthodox. So therefore, different groups have different definitions. Next is Pritzis. That's self-understood. That it has to be revealed. However, in Chuvas Minchas Yitzchak, he says, if you were talking about a Bachar and it was a historic incident, which a one-time incident in the past, it doesn't have to be revealed. Next, Chofetz Chaim brings a Shaila. What happens if they ask you, is he a Ben Torah? What are you supposed to say? So the Chofetz Chaim himself says that if the person's interested in why he's a Ben Torah, he should go take him to a Chacham and Fahem. And if he's not, can't be bothered to bring him to a Chacham to Fahem, obviously he doesn't care. In Zchut HaShani, Nissen Karelet says, that was in the times when it was normal to schlep a bacha to a chacham to be fahed. Today, it wouldn't be normal to do such a thing, and therefore, if the person really wants to know, you have to answer the question. However, as the Chalkas B'Yamin points out, that this is subjective. Different groups have different understandings of what's a ben Torah. Is a ben Torah someone who learns 3-star Medeva Asmada, or is it a person who can learn a Mishnah on his own? It has different definitions. So you have to know what definition the person is using. So an interesting thing from Ibsal Yaakov Fisher, he said, that's only if the person is looking for ben Torah because he wants a ben Torah. But if he's looking for ben Torah because he wants to say that his Adam is a ben Torah, then you don't have to be honest with him, because then he'll say that you got a ben Torah. Very precious.
To work by the definition of the one who's asking you the question, you have to work by your own definition.
No, by the one's asking you the question. Now, the Chofetz Chaim says an interesting psak. This that you have to give honest information is only when you know you're dealing with honest people. But if the person you're dealing with is also dishonest, a dishonest person who asks you about the perspective mechutin, does he keep his word? And you know the person asking you has never kept his word in his life. So then, he says, you don't have to tell them the truth. It's matzah minis minay, and tzaget deshidach. Rabbi Yashiv says that this is only when they're both dishonest in the same arena. They're both dishonest in finances. If one person is dishonest in finances and the other person is withholding a machla pnimi, that is not similar dishonest. It's not a similar level of dishonesty. Or as Abshul Hamana says, withholding finances will be a future dispute between the son-in-law and the father-in-law, as opposed to withholding a health issue will be a issue between the couple themselves, and therefore you cannot compare the two. Now, the cases, like I say, as unpleasant as it is, one has to reveal the truth about other people. Chofetz Chaim says to do so, you need 4 conditions. One, you know this is first-hand information. It's not just hearsay. Number 2, you're not allowed to exaggerate or embellish it. You have to say the truth as is. Number 3 is your kavanas l'ta'elas. It's not to harm anyone. You just want to help people. And the 4th thing is that you assume, or there's an assumption to say that this will be miskabel. If you know the person's not interested in the truth, or they're too invested in the shidduch or whatever, then don't bother saying it. If there's they'll listen to you, and you know it firsthand, and you're not exaggerating, and you're doing it to Ellis, it is mutter. This brings up a question. Sometimes things are just rumors, but sometimes I have pretty reliable secondhand information. Am I allowed to repeat it? And when you learn Chofetz Chaim, it sounds like not. However, in Chuvas Ksav Sefer, he says that if you can reveal it in a way that you say it's not a fact, this is what I heard, and you know that the person will also not accept it as fact, but accept it as something that they have to check up on, then he says you're allowed to. What about fudging about age? They ask you, how old is this bachur? How old is this girl? Are you allowed to do so? So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Shalmei Simcha says, doesn't know any heta in the world to fib about age. Chazanish in the Sefer, brought down in the Sefer Ma'aseh Ish, and Rav Aaron Kotler in the Sefer Titan Emes LeYaakov says that you could fudge up to 2 years. Well, 2 years, it's be'erach. It's be'erach the same. Rabbi Yamin Zilber says it depends on subjectively on what's the norm in these circles. All these things are not only about giving information during a shidduch process, but they even apply after a person is engaged. Let's say you know someone was engaged, they ask you about him, or you know about it, you might still and you know that they're hiding something, there still is a lesamayt al dam re'echa. People sometimes say, oh, once they're engaged, then we can't say anything. It's not true. The only difference is that the fourth criterion of the Chafetz Chaim, that it has to be a probability that will be niskabel, that will change. Because many times, once a person is engaged, they're not going to break it for something which, had they known before, they wouldn't have done the shidduch. But if it's the type of thing that a person would, that if they would know about it after they're engaged, they would take it very seriously and rethink it, you have an obligation to disclose it.
And if they're married?
And if they're married, many times also there's leisamad al dam re'echa, people that are engaging in behaviors that will present harm to their spouses. So yes, if you cannot stop them, so then you're going to have to disclose it.
You have to be concerned about the neighbor for the listener, because he can't believe it, but he can only take preventative measures to make sure the shidduch doesn't happen.
That's a general question in, that's a shidduch question. This is a question in Lashon Hara. And it says in Chafetz Chaim, you don't have to. Next is the shatchan. In popular culture, shatchan is especially like a used car salesman, somewhere below a used car salesman in the honesty expectation. Probably comes from Fiddler on the Roof or something like that. But in reality, the Chafetz Chaim says the shatchan has the greatest obligation. Why? Because they're serving as an advisor. And when you're advising someone to do a shidduch, so then, whenever you give advice, there's lifnei iver loy sitein mechshol. You should give someone an eitza ha'hegenes loy. When someone asks you an eitza, you have to give them an eitza that's good for them. Briskro is medayek. It says eitza ha'hegenes loy, not eitza ha'hegenes. Sometimes that's tagita eitza for the whole world. This shidduch is mamish gevaldik. For the tikkun ha'olam, it's gevaldik, it should happen. But it's not good for the person who's asking you. It has to be an eitza ha'hegenes loy. You know, when Tzvi Pesach Frank was nifta, so they offered to be the Rav HaRashi of Yerushalayim to Yerushalayim Zalman Auerbach. So he didn't know what to do. They said it would be a big accomplishment. He would take over and be Maimed Hadas Al Tila. On the other hand, he was a Shivan Kol Teira. And he went to ask the Chabina Rav, what do you think? And Chabina Rav said, so I'll give an agresu tikkun for Yerushalayim if you take the job. So, Shlomo Zalman said, thank you, Rebbe, you're telling me it's no good for me. I got the hint. So you should know that sometimes, grace is taken for Gansu Yishalayim, but it's no good for me. And he stayed in Kultur. And therefore, a person has to know, if you're acting as a shatran, and you're giving advice, sometimes a shatran just throws names, so it's not, they're doing nothing. Sometimes shatran calls up and gives you 20 names, so that in case later you do the shidduch for a totally different reason, they can call up and say, you owe us money because you heard it from me first. But I'm not talking about that type of shatran. I'm talking about someone's giving you advice, and I think it's good for you, and this and that. So you should know the person is an advisor. And if he's an advisor, you have even if it's not le samad al dam re'echa, it's not called, doesn't reach the level of samad al dam re'echa, doesn't reach the level of aino and mekach tos, but it's still bad advice. And you're not allowed to give bad advice.
Which side does he have to take?
Whenever he's talking to the person, he has to switch sides as he's talking. When you're talking to the girl side, you have to give the best advice to the girl. When you're talking to the boy side, you have to tell the best advice for the boy. Some shachanim think that they are HaKadosh Baruch Hu's shliach. Hashem, who's Mezavik Zevukim, cannot manage without them. And therefore, they have to be a broker for Rabbeinu Shleilam, or an agent, a shliach leilacha from the Eivishter, to make sure that Shinan HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make it without a shachan. And you have responsibilities. I remember in my youth, didn't quite understand it, then I was still a bacha, I was learning about David Soloveitchik in Yerushalayim, and it seems someone read the shidduch which was totally, totally irresponsible. And I remember when David was in the back of the Beis Medrash, was during night seder, and he started screaming at a very high-pitched voice. He said, "The Welt sagt, as shadchen is sheker doiver kesef neitel. Ihr sagt, so scheufech domen kesef neitel. Maharag da weg de mensch, and nothing betten vergelt." That's what you're saying. It's about this particular shidduch. I'm not casting any aspersions on shadchanim, just the stereotype of shadchanim. Now, what is the uniqueness of shadchanim? Because they are an advisor. Because they are an advisor, you have a unique responsibility called lifnei iver asita michshol. This will apply to other people that are in advisory roles. A bacha goes, asks his rosh yeshiva, "I'm going out and this and this and this, and I have this and this problem." Now, even if Shiva has his own set of beliefs and platitudes, whatever, you have to give advice. What's good for this person? When you're giving advice, you have to do what's good for this person. Another example, this is not written, but Shlomo Zalman writes this, is generally when you ask someone information, it's not a shaila of advice, it's a shaila of Lesama El Dam Recha. What happens if someone suggests you a shidduch from a faraway country and you only know one person in that country and you ask them information? Shlomo Zalman says at that point the person turns into an advisor because they know that you're relying on this person totally, and at that point he is an advisor. The same thing might be with family. People have a thing like in families there's no issur lashon hara. That's not the vart. The vart is because if I'm asking my aunt something, I'm relying on her. I'm not taking it like everyone else. When you ask information, you call 10 people because you know each person, everyone has a different perspective. Sometimes I'm asking a relative in certain circumstances, it's because I'm relying on this relative. When you're relying on a person, they have a din of an advisor. And therefore, when you're giving advice, you have to be very, very careful. You know, when I went into Rabbanus, I started off, my first position was in Kaladas Yishron of Mansi. And my predecessor was Rav Naftali Friedler, a great Talmud of Rav Dessler, later Rav Shiva in Washington Heights, and then he was Rav in Mansi. And when he became ill, I took over for him. And whenever he refused to give advice, if someone asked him advice, he refused to give. I can give Paskin you any shayla in the world, I'm not going to give advice. If someone pushed him, he would say, I can't tell you what to do. If it was me, I would do this. And I asked him why. He said, I'm deathly afraid of lufnei iver leisitin mishul. I'm giving advice. Sadachi lufnei iver leisitin mishul. Eitz ha'genis lai. So I asked him, I don't understand you. Lifnei iver leisitin mishul is when you give eitz she'ein ha'genis b'mezid. You go and you advise someone to sell a field because you want to buy it. That's Rashi's mashul. You have no negius over here. You're giving advice. Yes, you might be mistaken. But someone's mistaken in giving advice to say, lifnei iver leisitin mishul. What are you so afraid of? And he said, you know what I'm afraid of? Because if it was my grandchild asking me advice, I'd think about it for a half hour and I'd make some phone calls. And when a person, when a congregant comes and asks me advice, I just flip off advice off the top of my head thing. He said, it could be it's not the mezid of the evil leisitin mishul, but lamaisa, this is our mishul, because the person thinks they're getting advice from a great Adam Gadol, and the Val, he's just puttering it up and saying what's going off the top of his head, and he's not thinking it through. And therefore, to summarize what we learned tonight, is basically there are three different groups of people. The principals in Shidduchim have to make sure not to fool someone else. The general guideline for fooling someone else means, is it something which if they'd find out afterwards they'd still be makbid or they'll accept it? People being asked information or aware of things have on one hand, Eloi Seilach Rachel Bamecha, don't be a gossip, don't talk about Lysisa Shema Shav, but at the same time they have to balance it against Esamad al Demre Echa, which the Chafetz Chaim defines as Machlois, various Chamuras, and Pritzas. And finally, you have people that are serving as advisors, they have to make sure to give Eitzah again, it's like Yiratzin, that we should conduct ourselves in life. It's easier to say this year than to keep this year. I know that. True about many things, but this particularly so. But we have to approach, again, Shidduchim responsibly. On one hand, like I said, have Tovus Ayin to be able to praise people who deserve the praise, see the good in people, see the positive in people. Someone told me a word that the Shvatim said, Keinem Anachnu. We're positive people. We're not critical people. Keinem Anachnu. We're people who say Kein. We are people that are positive. But at the same time, as positive as you should be, there's something called toxic positivity. You should not be positive when something is harmful to other people, and we have a responsibility to protect other people too. And that's chus. We should all find shaduchim for our children, our grandchildren, and we should be zeichet to see deres yisham and barachim. Okay.